We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back to another episode of New Orleans Dot Football presented by PJ's Coffee. We're coming to you from our studio on Veterans Memorial Boulevard. Right next door to my guy, Matt Bowers. Check out his Ford dealership up here. And if Fords aren't your cup of tea, they got dealerships all over the region, all different types of car brands. But the one consistent thing is the car buying experience. It's going to be the best you find with the best prices, best customer care, in and out at the best rates that you can find. That's my guy. Make sure you go check him out. We got a great show for you guys today. We're going to go through a bunch of draft picks from years past, audit them, see what went right, what went wrong, and go through those. And if you aren't yet signed up to NewOrleans.football, make sure you do that today. Use the code NOF to save 20% on your first payment. You'll get all of our news, analysis, an extra podcast every week, and so much more. Get locked in before the draft. And all right, let's hit these ads and get into the show. The New Orleans Dot Football Show is proudly presented by PJ's Coffee. PJ's Coffee has some of the best drinks that you can find. They have locations all over the city. They have pastries and everything else you need to get your day started. So go check them out. Are you looking for the perfect engagement ring? Look no further than Friend & Company Fine Jewelers' new engagement salon. This new area houses a wide selection of engagement rings to choose from in all cuts, sizes, and colors. Their experienced staff offer five-star customer care to help you find the perfect ring to express your love. Visit their new engagement salon today. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers, the perfect ring for the perfect moment and also for the perfect person. 7713 Maple Street between Adams and Burdett Street. 504-866-5433. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers. Check them out at friendandcompany.com. Hard Hide Punch Tool Strawberry Whiskey is an 86-proof blend of aged wheat bourbon, American light whiskey, and fresh Punch Tool strawberries. Blended in New Orleans, it is not for the thin-skinned. Look for it in your favorite stores, bars, and restaurants. New Orleans Dot Football is proud to be sponsored by Firehouse Subs. Make sure you check out their location on Veterans Boulevard. All right, let's get into the show. Let's get into our lead topic presented by Friend & Company Fine Jewelers, the official jewelers of the New Orleans Saints. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers has an outstanding engagement salon. If you are looking to get a ring for that special someone, go there, get a ring, get a great price. They can take care of all your needs, any size diamond you need, whatever you got to do, they'll help you get it right. And while you're there, make sure you check out their Florida Lee necklace and earrings that you see on the screen right now. The earrings are priced at $1,100 and the necklace is $1,350. Tell them that NOF sent you.
All right, y'all, let's get into the lead topic. Let's audit the Saints' first-round picks since 2015. This week, we're going to do a deep dive on every pick the Saints have made and haven't made since 2015. We chose 2015 because that's when Jeff Ireland started overseeing the college scouting department. Any thoughts on the first-rounders?
Many. Many. Where you want to start, 2013?
I wanted to ask first, before we go pick by pick, do you think this is going to be positive or negative? Do you think 2015 through 2023 first rounders
negative?
Things be negative. Yeah. I completely agree. I think it very recently is maybe number one on the list of what has undermined this team behind obviously losing Drew Brees and Sean Payton. There's some big misses on here.
Yeah, the early, the late, the in between. I mean, it's kind of been their hardest round, and it's kind of fascinating to think about. I mean, you start in 2015, they had Pete and Stephon Anthony, and look, Andrews Pete kind of changed the narrative for his situation quite a bit, I think, last year. But if you want to be honest about it, even the thought process behind that didn't work out. They wanted him to play right tackle. He didn't end up playing right tackle. He ends up being a guard. I don't think you're trying to take a guard at 13 overall. Now, I know he has the Pro Bowl acclaim and all that, but I think realistically, I don't think he lived up to that billing. And I think overall, like, while that pick, I think, isn't terrible, it's kind of okay, but he got 9 years with the team, so that says something too. But I don't think the idea of it hit. So I would, you could argue that both of these are a little bit off. But Anthony, I think, is the worst pick of the whole entire tenure.
I don't agree with that. Well, we don't know yet if Trevor Penning could be. Trevor Penning would be worse if he never gets on the field. So that's not fair to say that. But he's got competition.
He's got competition for sure. Yeah.
The only thing in the Saints' defense is this was a crappy first round in NFL history. This is not one of those they missed on both these guys and everyone else was hitting. I tried to go and find who they should have taken. First of all, I know who some in the building wanted them to take. They wanted Andres Pete and Marcus Peters that year. They would have had to trade up to get Marcus Peters with the second pick. Marcus Peters ended up going 18th that year. He would have been an okay pick, not a world beater, better than Stephon Anthony, obviously. After Andres Pete, Devontae Parker, Melvin Gordon, Kevin Johnson, Eric Armstead was a good pick. Marcus Peters, Cam Irving, the guy who's been back, Nelson Aguilar, Cedric Oguipe, Bud Dupree, Shane Ray, DJ Humphries, Shaq Thompson. There just are not a lot of home runs. I think their biggest miss, though, was with Stephon Anthony taking a linebacker. I remember this draft very vividly. They needed a linebacker that year, and there was this like group of four, and the other ones were Bernardrick McKinney, Eric Kendricks, and Denzel Perryman, and the other three guys all went in round two, and they've all been studs. They could have nailed that pick.
I wanted them to take Eric Armstead. I thought Stephon Anthony in the second, like a lot of the mocks I was doing at the time, I had Stephon Anthony in the second round. Like, I thought he would have been a good second rounder for them. I wanted them to take Eric Armstead. I thought it would have addressed the need. But look, I mean, they made a mistake acquiring another pick in this draft. I mean, if that's kind of how it looked. It's just it's tough there. So looking at 16, how we feel about Sheldon Rankins?
I wish I had done better with that pick, but speaking of doing mock drafts, I think I did my first mock draft. If I did my first mock draft around the time of the Senior Bowl, had Sheldon Rankins in it, and everyone from that point on had Sheldon Rankins in it, and most Saints mock drafts had Sheldon Rankins in them that year. It was a big need for them. It was just kind of like picking a left tackle this year. It was just like the obvious projection for them. When I go back through what they should have done, there's some hits on the offensive line that year, Laremy Tunsil, Taylor Decker, a few picks afterward. Obviously some other picks throughout the draft, but I don't even remember who else anyone was really clamoring for. Later in that round, Kenny Clark went. He's had a better career, but I think everyone was kind of on board with them taking Rankins, and he's sort of in that Pete mode. He wasn't a disaster. He was pretty good. Wish he had been better. Health played a big part of that. What's your second guess on this, if any?
None, because, I mean, you want to talk about bad drafts, starting with pick 10, ooh, Eli Apple, Vernon Hargreaves, Rankins, Tunsil, obviously was a good one, Carl Joseph, Corey Coleman, Taylor Decker, Keanu Neal, Ryan Kelly, Shaq Lawson, Darren Lee, Will Fuller, Josh Doctson, Treadwell, William Jackson III, Artie Burns, Paxton Lynch, Kenny Clark, Joshua Garnett, Nimdichi, Vernon Butler. I mean, Ifeedy. Like, it was not a good draft. So
Paxton Lynch is in there somewhere.
It filled a need. You know, second guessing it, like, they should have took Mike Thomas there. Like, really? I mean, that's the pick they should have made.
So, a good round two that year, which is a continuing theme.
Yeah. So it wasn't a great draft.
Look at round two though. Chris Jones is in there. Who else? Michael Thomas made it to round two. I swear I saw someone else that was just a Derrick Henry made it to round two. Every team in the league, Deion Jones, Jaron Reed, every team in the league did better in round
James
two.
James Bradbury. Round, right? Yeah. James Bradbury would have been a good pick.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just a sophomore in high school at the time. And so, like, all of these names, I was like, oh, they're big in college. They're getting picked here, here, and here. And I was like, wait, they picked Rankins? And so, you know, I was like, maybe not. But, you know, evidently he wasn't the guy that they wanted him to be, so they moved on. And let's move on to 2017, the home run with Lattimore and Ramchick.
Yeah,
two best picks they've made in the first round and the worst round they ever had.
Yeah,
because it should have been Pat Mahomes. Yeah, I mean, geez. Marshawn Lattimore at 11 and Ryan Ramchick at 32. The only negative that you can put on it is that they should have traded up and drafted Mahomes because they had conviction on Mahomes. They love Mahomes. I think Lattimore was something like third on their board and Mahomes was something like fourth on their board. They were just on fire that year. If there never was a Patrick Mahomes, you know, everyone would just agree it's, you know, like Ray Lewis and Jonathan Ogden is one of the greatest first rounds you could have.
Yeah, I got no complaints about that one.
Like I said, it was a home run.
Yep.
Let's go on to 18 when they took Marcus Davenport at the 14th pick. What you think, Mike?
It's obviously one of the worst picks that they made, but only because of what they paid for it. I did not like at the time how much they paid for it. Or I actually remember being on Twitter all day the next day, sort of arguing back, because after that 2017 draft, Saints fans were very different than they are now. Saints fans were everything the Saints do is right.
Yeah.
Never criticize the Saints for anything. How dare you criticize them? And I was just like cautioning, just don't say they didn't pay a ton. They paid two first-round picks. It's a ton. It's scary. You don't know where your pick's going to be next year. But once that argument gets put to the side, did they pay too much for one guy? Mm. I thought Davenport was the right pick at 14 that year. They needed a defensive end bad. It was a good way to get a cheap one. Defensive end salaries were escalating around the league. And if you go back through this draft, the defensive ends after Marcus Davenport, there was not another one taken in round one after he was taken at 14. There was one outside linebacker, but it was Leighton Vander Esch, who's a really off-ball linebacker. Then you get to Harold Landry at 41, who's been pretty good, but he was 6'2", 250, not the Saints kind of guy. You got to go all the way to, I guess, Taven Bryan for Jacksonville could have been a defensive end. He was listed as a defensive tackle at the time. You got to go all the way to, I mean, to see a true defensive end, your 46th pick, Breland Sparks, and I've never even heard of that guy. So if they wanted a defensive end, they had to be aggressive to get him. I just hate how much they paid. And if they had stayed put, they could have drafted Lamar Jackson. So that makes this a bad pick. But I don't hate the thinking behind it, I guess.
I think the thing how I would put it is I would say the scouting was right. It was just kind of – it just didn't work. He was obviously an incredibly talented player. Like – everything he did was on film. We've seen it in the NFL. And anybody who says we didn't see it, that's revisionist. That's not telling the truth. Like, there were times where he was the best player on the field in a lot of games. And he just wasn't on the field enough. And then he got into his head and he had the confidence issues and all that stuff. And it was all kind of stuff that, like, was tough to see that ended up undermining him. Now, I go back and do think about the scouting reports and everything when he was coming to the league. There were whispers about, him having a weird personality, which I think sometimes is incredibly unfair. But then when things go wrong, you just tend to tap into like, oh, man, what did they mean by that? Maybe that was a warning sign. Maybe they should have seen it. But that's easy to do in hindsight. Like, some of the stuff about him was like, he's a guy that likes reading books. Like, what the hell does that mean? Like, come on. So it's tough to know what that actually means. But then, like I said, in hindsight, it's kind of like, yeah, maybe there was some, you know, he was just a little bit different than regular NFL players.
Self-doubt issues constantly. He was in his head constantly. It wasn't just the injuries, but the injuries probably led to a lot of that.
I think that was inherent to who he was, and then the injuries
exacerbated it. Yeah, exactly. So I'm on record at the time for saying I was uncomfortable with giving up two first-round picks for him, because I think there's guys who give up two first-round picks for. I don't think you should give up two first-round picks for anyone who gets picked 14th overall. Like, he deserved to go 14th in that draft. He didn't deserve to be a two first-round picks guy. Yeah. That was kind of my opinion on him. But
everyone
agreed they needed a defensive end at the time, and the cost of getting a defensive end was tough. And it's not like they were missing on 10 other good defensive ends that came out of that draft class.
If he had maintained the highs 100% of the time, though, like, it's arguable that it would have been.
Yeah.
It's arguable that
it was a team that really was like a piece away.
It's arguable that he could have made it a worthwhile invest. Like, because he had the potential to be like a 12, 15 sack guy. He didn't. Yeah. So, yeah, you're right, though.
It was a team that won, went on to win 13 games that year, went on to win 13 games the next year. They were a team that was kind of one piece away, which, you know, they're paying for that now.
Right idea, wrong candidate. Yeah.
So they burnt their 2019 pick because they chose Davenport. So let's go to 2020. At 24, they chose Cesar Ruiz, and at 28, they chose Peyton Turner.
The next year. Those are two picks. Yeah, two different.
I'm sorry. In 2020, they chose Cesar Ruiz. So what do you think about them trying to shore up the O-line with Ruiz?
He's got to become more consistent. I mean, I think he's made it okay. He's made it palatable. Early on in his tenure, it wasn't. I think he got to a point where it was okay. I think 2 years ago, he was really getting there. I thought last year he dipped a little bit, and I think he just needs to be just a little bit more consistent across the board. I think he can figure that out. He's kind of like teetering on that a little bit. It's fine. Like, I don't think you put an up arrow on it. I don't think you put a down arrow on it. He's kind of just, it's just okay.
You know, what's funny about that pick is people despised it at the time. Like, and that was the LSU draft. They just won. They just won the title that year. Mm-hmm. Justin Jefferson went 22nd. Everyone was hoping he was going to fall. Patrick Queen went 28th. Patrick Queen wasn't really a Saints kind of guy, but a lot of obviously LSU fans wanted. They both would have been really good picks. Brandon Ayuk went right around there. Jordan Love went right around there. T. Higgins and Michael Pittman went right around there. So just so many more exciting guys, and they're like a guard. However, I actually like that pick more today as we sit here in these chairs than I probably ever have, because the scouting was, like, you cannot blame the scouting. 3-year starter at Michigan, like, one of the most physical conferences in football. Absolutely, you know, had the talent, the skills, the experience, all the scouts agreed he was a great player. The athleticism, he was only 20 years old. He was young. Like, if you're going to draft an interior lineman at 24, he seemed like as safe as possible. And now they only have two offensive linemen that we can count on this entire roster. So if they hadn't drafted him, would they have four holes in their offensive line? So it kind of feels like something they had to do. But there were just way more exciting guys picked around his spot.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things, and, you know, I know how they talk about it, but looking at the list, and I think it's league-wide too, honestly, like, teams often end up drafting for need in the first round. And almost every pick they made in the first round was based upon some type of need. This was one where they kind of got backed into a corner again, and they had to get the interior player. They're doing it again here. You know, they did it with – kind of like, it's just kind of over and over. It's kind of a thing that they do. And I think that's one where they kind of had to take him. And it was kind of like, you got to get a guard because they let their guys go and never replaced them. And it's the same position now. So hopefully there isn't a thing where it's like, it's fine. Like, you want to have a hit, but it's fine. Like, they addressed the need. It's a continued need. They had to do it. And, you know, they got rid of Warford and they had to take him.
2022 was Peyton Turner.
2021.
Or no, we're up to 2021 now. Peyton Turner, Brandon mentioned. I mean, obviously a bigger disappointment and a pick that I think people hated even more at the time. Nobody liked this pick. This was the one where it was like he was on nobody's big board. He was in no one's round one. No Mel Kiper, no Daniel Jeremiah, none of them. Until some reports, early that day of the draft.
Yeah.
Some teams, which makes you wonder, did multiple teams tell reporters that they like Peyton Turner, or did just people in the Saints building tell people they like Peyton Turner? But again, injuries are what made Peyton Turner a horrible pick. The talent, I don't think he's that far off. I always felt like if he had just been picked 40th, it would have been like, okay, people would have been like, oh, cool. I like the size. I like the length. I like the athleticism. I like them taking a chance on a guy. Just something about that stigma of round one and the fact that no one was putting him in round one. If he had been a second round pick, I think people would have been a lot more palatable. I remember the guy I liked in that range at the time was Elijah Moore. He has not blown the doors off the NFL. He's had enticing potential, but hasn't really done it. I mean, they could have gone a big defensive end two picks later. Gregory Rousseau for the Bills has had a better career, but not a superstar career. I don't know that this one comes with the, you know, they should have taken Mahomes, they should have taken Lamar Jackson, they should have taken Justin Jefferson stigma to it, but it's another pick that obviously hasn't worked out.
Yeah. It set him back so far, too. Just the two misses there. All the misses, you know, you look at the cumulative effect, and it's just kind of so obvious. In the areas where they have the biggest issues, it's just these misses. And I'm not closing the door on this guy by any means. Like, he could come back and change the narrative or whatever. There's plenty of time. He's still young. I mean, but to this point, it's a miss. And it's, you know, he has less production than Haioli Kakaha, you know, so it's tough. It's tough to be in that position right now. So, I mean, him and Davenport, neither one of them giving him production, Davenport not being around, Turner on the cusp of not being around. I mean, it's just such an overall.
I think
hit.
It's the biggest reason why they are where they are right now. I mean, none in 19. Well, Davenport in 18, none in 19, Ruiz in 20, Turner in 21, and then we're about to get to Trevor Penning being one of the ones in 2022. That's five first round picks that have amounted to Cesar Ruiz being the only reliable one on the entire roster right now. It's gutting them.
Yeah, I think with Peyton Turner, you know, you're a big fan of his in terms of believing that he has the potential to just fill in those shoes and make a difference. But I think it's coming to the end, and, you know, he was a small school guy. You know what I mean? He went to Houston. So I think that it might be close to the
end. Oh, it's do or die time for him, yeah. No doubt about it. Yeah, no doubt about it. He has to do it quickly or, you know, it's – that's it. Like, this is the end of the road for him right here. So he's got to do it, and I think this season determines his future with the team.
Yeah.
Let's go. Yeah, look, I've been hoping that he can resurrect his career and do something with it, but it's been a long time since I've thought anywhere near where he was drafted, that's for sure.
Yeah. Let's go to 22 with Chris Olave at pick 11 and Trevor Penning at pick 19.
One of the best picks they've had at the top and one of the worst they've had at the bottom. And again, same thing on Trevor. I think the runway's wide open for him. If he just becomes serviceable, I think it changes just how you value this significantly. But to this point, arguably in that mix of biggest miss of all, he's given him nothing, hasn't been able to get on the field. Even Stephon Anthony had a year as a starter. You know, Penning hasn't even had that yet. So, you know, I think there's just so much that he has to do to kind of turn that around a little bit. You know, and as far as Olave goes, he had a disappointing season by his own standards, by everyone. Like, there was a level of frustration that kind of just sat in the middle, and he still put up tremendous numbers. So I remain incredibly excited about his potential and his future. Penning, I kind of feel the opposite.
Yeah, Chris Olave is probably number one on the list of assets you're most excited about on the Saints entire roster for the short term and the long term, really. And Penning's the biggest question mark. He will be last on that list of draft picks, below Stephon Anthony, below Andres Pete, below Peyton Turner, if he never gets on the field. Obviously, a lot of time left. We've mentioned that Pete could be the path to him. Like, Pete got off to a really slow start, couldn't get on the field, couldn't find a position. So even that would feel like a win right now if he gets to Andres Pete level. What's funny about this one is it's another cost of acquisition. They made that goofy trade with the Eagles that would have been fine if people's trade value charts would have just said, oh, look, the Eagles had three first-round picks. They wanted to get rid of one, and so they gave the Saints a little bit of a deal. But everyone just kind of universally agreed, wow, the Saints paid a fortune to get this extra first-round pick. Why? And then I think part of the reason was they really wanted the ammo to get Olave. They needed a receiver that year. That was a home run pick. But Trevor Penning becomes the face of the – you know, originally that year they had the 18th pick in the draft. Maybe they would have just sat still and taken Trevor Penning anyway, never would have gotten an Olave. But it just feels like, why did you give up all this ammo to have two first-round picks that year? And then it just puts so much pressure on the player to deliver when you give up all those picks. They gave up a future one to have this combination of picks and trade-ups. Put so much pressure on a guy to deliver. And that pick the next year almost became like a top
five.
Well,
the issue with the trade for me is that it was done well before the draft. Like, it wasn't even because this guy was on the board. It was just they were just like, we want two picks, and it doesn't matter who the guys are. We'll be able to get someone. And it's just like,
it was part of their cap strategy, I think. Honestly, that was the year after COVID where they were like, we can't afford anyone, so let's get two first rounders.
Another need-based move.
Yeah,
those are always, you know, in hindsight, there's some sketchiness to it.
Before we hit Brazil, let's roll back to Davenport. We got a super chat question from Matt. He says, had Okafor not ripped his Achilles tendon, would the Saints not have traded up for Davenport?
No, they were doing that. They wanted the pass rusher. They had to get him. They were too good. They didn't want to spend the money in free agency. So they felt the best way to get somebody, the only way they were going to get someone was by trading up, because if you wait to pick in the 20s, you aren't going to get someone that's going to be a difference maker. So they were doing that hell or high water. Yeah.
I have a what if question for you on that draft. We have detailed the what definitely would have happened with Patrick Mahomes scenario a million times. I have not ever gotten quite as good of an intel because Davenport was kind of the plan that year. But do you think if they stayed put at 27, they would have taken Lamar Jackson?
No, I don't.
You don't think they would?
Nope. Yeah. I'm 100% certain of it. I know Saints lore with other reporters say it's different. I am incredibly confident in my sources on that one, and I think there was no chance that was
happening. I think that has hurt that pick more than anything, is people saying it, they should have taken Lamar there.
I would.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would argue before God that wouldn't happen. So,
all right, now let's roll to last year's pick, Brian Brzee at number 29. What do we think about how the big man is produced?
I think he got off to 4.5 sacks. I mean, I think as far as the start goes for a DT, you know, like 6.5 sacks, you're like really good at that position. Like those are like the top, you're in the top half of the league at that point, maybe even higher. And I think he was right there. I think it's just the run defense needs to catch up a little bit, and then you keep polishing that. Up, I think he has a lot of hope behind him, I think, as far as becoming like a really good player.
The jury, I think, is way still out on this pick, though, because I couldn't be happier with his rookie season. I mean, there were health concerns, there were injury concerns. He had lost all that weight the year before. Was that going to affect him? Just had a totally clean rookie year, played maybe even more productive than I expected, at least as productive as I expected, and he should be able to hit the ground running going forward. But I remember, you know, 2 years into Sheldon Rankin's career, being super excited about him, and then he just never think of how we felt about Pete Werner last year, just never hasn't taken that second step yet. So I really wonder what time will say for this, but he's on that short list of assets I'm glad that the Saints have right now.
Yeah, he's definitely not. It's not hammered in or anything. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, I think the start was solid, and you build on it, you're on a good path. But, yeah, we'll definitely see.
And I definitely don't have a what if. I mean, I think we had him in, like, two of our four mock drafts that we did that year, and if he was going to be available, it felt like he was going to be the pick. And I don't think there was even any, you know, obviously someone like Sam Laporta was taken a few picks later, but nobody at the time was saying they should have taken Sam Laporta. I don't think he is any, it should have been this guy, stigma attached to him.
Yeah. Brzee definitely produced this year. And I think, you know, going forward, continuing to grow, he can only get better. All right, let's roll on to our next segment bought by Jouway Productions. You need audio, you need video, Jouway has you covered. Visit them at jouway.productions. Marshawn Lattimore, the last inklings that we had on him said that status is pretty hopeful that he sticks with the team, but that's if the team doesn't have a better offer that could, you know, make sense on both sides for him to walk. But do we think that the Saints need to put a hard deadline on the final decision of Lattimore staying here or not? They let, you know, Ike Yadam walk in free agency, and they haven't been able to replenish that. So do they need to have a hard deadline between day one and day two of the draft?
No, I don't think so. And I actually think the likelihood of him getting traded is much higher after the draft, because if they let him go now, I mean, you got to take all the cap hit, all that stuff. It becomes much more costly. Right. I think that as they look at it, the likelihood of this happening is more so getting a pick in the next draft. That would actually be beneficial for their cap. Like, I think if they were to do it now, they would have to get somebody that's desperate, and it would be almost like getting them on like payday loan terms. Whereas if you wait a year from now, like, you can make a trade, and, you know, your interest rate is, you know, I don't know what prime is right now, 9% or whatever. Like, you can do it on more fair terms after. But if you do it now, it's just because somebody needs it now. And I don't think it's going to happen that way. I don't think it needs to have a hard deadline. I think it's just, you got to see the right return to do it. And if you're making this as a short-term move, I think you're already making a mistake. If you have it's like, well, we have to get it for this year. Like, no, if you're going to trade them, you're kind of doing something to build. And if you can get it to a place where it makes sense whenever, I think it's doable. But
do you need to know, though, before the draft? Because if you don't draft a corner.
No, because they have the guys.
You think they do?
Yeah, it would be Paulson. It would be Alante. And you can put someone in the slot. Like, you can fill the slot position kind of, there's guys that are free agents. You could move Ugo there. Like, there's a lot of things that you could do to kind of fill that in. So I don't think you have to know that at all, actually. Like, I think you're okay. Like, Tyron could give you something in the slot if you had to. Like, there's just ways to do that that's easier to fill. So I don't think it's a must to know it right now. Yeah, I think you can go out and do that.
Do you draft? Does the importance of drafting a cornerback go up at all in your mind if you feel like it's unresolved next week? If you're the Saints and you know for sure it's 50-50, we still don't know. Does that make you more likely to want to take a corner somewhere in early?
Well, I mean, I think you would need a slot guy. I mean, it's possible that they could draft one anyhow, but I think if you trade Marshawn, you're just kind of fine with what happens with your season. Like,
That's true. You're rebuilding at that point.
Yeah, you're almost. It's not like you aren't making that trade to make your team better. Yeah. So it's if we're poor at this position, so be it. Like, we're going to see what we have with Alante on the outside, and then you go into the next draft knowing, you know, what you actually need at cornerback as opposed to just like at the slot spot. So if you're doing it, yeah, you're rebuilding. I mean, yeah. I think that's kind of what you're saying. You're punting on the season, kind of. You're going to win 7 games, 6 games, 5 games, whatever it is, and you're just going to roll forward like that.
We're running a poll right now in the chat, and 100% says no. They don't think that they're going to trade lads, so I think they're not throwing in the white flag yet. We're going to hit a quick break, and then we'll be right back.
Shrimp Remoulade combos are back at New Orleans Hamburger and Seafood Company. Zesty Shrimp Remoulade served with fried shrimp, catfish, or soft-shell crab starting at $10.99. Or try one of our spring specials, catfish Lafitte or lemon caperfish with crab meat now at New Orleans Hamburger and Seafood Company.
Are you tired of renting and ready to own your dream home? Contact Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union, your trusted source for home loans. Our competitive rates and flexible terms can help make your home ownership dreams a reality. If you're a first-time home buyer or looking to refinance, our experienced lenders are here to help. Our online application process allows you to apply on your schedule. It's quick, easy, and convenient. Visit us online at jeffersonfinancial.org to learn more. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.
Martin Wine and Spirits is home to a selection of hand-picked barrel select bourbon, whiskeys, and much, much more. They are family owned and operated since 1946 and specialize in wine, spirits, gourmet food, gift baskets, catering, and tasting events. They have many locations, so they're never too far away. You can check them out in Metairie, New Orleans, Mandeville, and Baton Rouge, or if it's more convenient, you can always shop online. Whether you're a wine novice or a seasoned collector, you'll enjoy the Martin Wine and Spirit experience.
We're back at our new studio on Veterans Memorial Boulevard, and now it's time for the Hard High Ponchatoula Strawberry Whiskey segment of the day. Hopefully, y'all got a chance to go out to Ponchatoula this weekend for the Strawberry Fest. Good stuff out there. It's time for another Would You Rather scenario that Mike has been coming up with for this year. Mike, take it away.
Yeah, look, we don't spend a lot of time dwelling on the top 30 visits that the Saints make. They bring guys in. I mean, it's obviously interesting, and if they end up drafting them, we find out what they wanted to know about them when they brought in here. But the correlation between who they're going to draft and who they bring in is so low. But two have stood out to me recently because they are two guys that we're just starting to see all over NFL media as just generating a ton of buzz. Speaking of Peyton Turner being hey, I'm hearing this guy might go in the first round. A lot of reporters are starting to say that about Western Michigan edge rusher Marshawn Neyland, who is most people think is a second-round talent, and then this Western Kentucky receiver, Malachi Corley. He's like a dynamic playmaker, and I think it was Field Yates had put out a tweet where he said he was second in all of college football in broken tackles last year, and then Corley tweeted out, I want to know who broke more tackles than me. I'm sure he's a great player or something.
Yeah.
But we don't have to debate these two guys. I'm sure you haven't broken down the film, but it struck me as, all right, let's say the Saints do one of these risk-reward, small-school, dynamic players in round two. Would you rather see it be an edge rusher, like a guy from Western Michigan, or a dynamic playmaker at the receiver position? This guy in particular is like 5'10", plays in the slot, but I'm not talking about that big receiver that we know they need. I'm talking more of a luxury pick. Would you rather see it be maybe a part-time edge rusher, part-time playmaker?
I don't have the data on this, but it just feels like your odds of hitting on a wide receiver in the second round and having that actual upside is a lot higher. There's a lot of like second-round wide receivers who are great. I don't know the number on edge rushers. It just feels like you're going to have a better chance of hitting there. And especially, I think, in this draft, like, because you do have a lot of depth at wide receiver in this year's draft. it's OT, it's wide receiver. And then I think most of the other positions are kind of considered to be a little bit shallow outside of them. And I don't think it's kind of viewed as a great draft overall, but those two positions are. So if we're talking specific to this draft, give me the wide receiver. Like, just hit there. Like, we'll see what happens with Foskey. You already have one of those on the team. Like, bring in the guy and let's see the actual race play out.
That's the thing. Part of me likes hearing all this buzz around Marshawn Nealon and thinking, oh, if the Saints got a guy like that at 45, that's kind of exciting. You know, we've had picks like that in the past. Stanley Jean Baptiste was another one. And when the Saints got him in round two, it's like, oh, they got that buzzworthy guy. And round two, what a steal. Like, it changes the perception so much. But I do partly feel like if you bring in a guy who is not a sure thing at defensive end, now all of a sudden you're saying, all right, so just lump him in with Foskey and lump him in with Peyton Turner. And they already have Chase Young and Carl Granderson and Cam Jordan. Like, I think the Saints really, really, really need a number one defensive end or maybe a number two defensive end. But do they just need another body who might get you X amount of snaps? I don't know. I still think I lead toward the edge rusher, but I just agree. Once you get into pick 45, that is a position where you're not even getting a sure thing that guy's going to see time on the field. If you find a dynamic playmaker, he'll get some snaps for sure.
Well, that'll take us into our Martin's question of the day. Martin's is home to a wide selection of hand-picked, barrel-select bourbon, whiskeys, and more. Martin's, so much more than just wine. This tweet comes from Who Dat Content. What has to happen for the Saints not? I know everybody's been talking about them doing it, which they have to do, but what has to happen for the Saints not to select an offensive lineman in round one? Take away.
They all have to disappear, and it's not going to happen. Like, it's not going to happen. Like, they're taking one in round one. I would almost bet everything on it. I don't see a scenario where, you know, one to six are gone or whatever it is. Like, there's a lot of guys that people like. I'd say there's five at that range that the three F players, Latham, Fashanu Fuaga, Latham, Fatanu, and all those guys I think would have to be gone, and Joel. So if I just don't see that happening. I don't see all five disappearing. And I think you're fine with any of the five, to be honest. I think any of the five, I think you're okay with taking.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of think it's the opposite. I don't think all five guys will be gone. So I think what would have to happen is somebody that the Saints just have so high on their board that they can't even, like, where they'd be like, now we're just drafting for need. Like, I don't know who that player would be. Is that Marvin Harrison Jr.? Or you know, if in their room they're like, hey, you know, Malik Nabers or Roman Dunze or you know, one of these other guys, they're just like, we have him rated as the second player in this draft, maybe. But I think from everything we're hearing, I think they have the tackles graded in, you know, as the most likely to pick. And they're not just only tunnel vision looking at tackles. I think the need is meeting the grade in this draft.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I mean, I just don't think there's anything realistic that could happen that would make that. And look, they're taking a tackle over a Dunze. I don't know what could happen to shake it. It's such a drastic need. It's such a drastic need that I don't even know that they have the luxury to look anywhere else. They, like, that's the problem with doing it that way. Like, and there is like, and they've talked about how there's, you know, the two vertical and the horizontal axis, and they have to meet for them to make a pick, unless it's like something incredibly wild. And there's just nothing that I could foresee occurring beyond. Yeah. I just don't see it. I don't see one happening.
I mean, I do agree with you. They draft for need a lot. But, I mean, we've seen a lot of examples, like the 2017 draft. It was either going to be Marshawn Lattimore or Patrick Mahomes. And then later that round, it was going to be Ryan Ramczyk or Reuben Foster. Like, I mean,
those were both needs, though, for him at the time.
Right, but what I'm saying is it's going to be a corner or a quarterback, and then they took the corner, and then it came down to a linebacker or a right tackle. Like,
yeah, but I mean, there aren't a lot of times where it's like
this position. Well,
they're taking this player, and there's no path.
Right,
there's no path at all for him. Like, that doesn't happen. This is probably my most controversial take, but I think BPA is a myth, and I think everybody lies about it because nobody ever makes a pick that is just like, what the hell are they doing? They got four edge rushers. Like, nobody ever does that.
No, I agree with that. But what I was going to say is the examples that we just went through, when they are this pigeonholed into a need, then they go get, like, that's when you trade up from 27 to 14 for Davenport. You don't stay at 27 and say, we're taking a defensive end. We don't care which one. They're like, we're taking a defensive end, and we only like one. We're going to get him. That's what they tried to do at corner a couple years ago. Was that the Ruiz draft or the Peyton Turner? It was the Peyton Turner draft, where they tried to go from, like, 28 to, like, 8 because they wanted to draft J.C. Horn or they wanted to draft Patrick. That year, they were like, we need a corner, and they tried to move up 20 spots for him. So that's what you see. The point this year is I don't think it matters. And I don't think they have to, I don't think they will they're trade up, lucky. And I don't think they have to
they're
trade
lucky
up.
That, because I think they're going to get to that spot. And I think
they would trade up this year. This year, if there was only, like, two of these guys and Ault went fifth, you'd see the Saints are trading up to number 6 if there was only one other tackle. That's how bad they need, like, one. Luckily, they can stay put.
If we're being honest, I honestly think they allow their needs to fall into the draft more often than I'm probably a little bit comfortable with. Like, I think the best way of doing it is filling everything out so that if someone does fall, like, you can do whatever. But they just don't – they haven't positioned themselves that way. And I almost think it's a strategy. I almost think they feel like, well, you don't have to fill every need in free agency. Yeah. You can do it in the draft. Like, I think it's a strategy, so to speak. And, you know, just a few times it's backfired. You know, now other times it has hit. Like, you mentioned Ramchek, that hit. Lattimore hit. Rankins was a need. I'd consider that a hit. Andrus Peat was a need. And it didn't hit the way they wanted it to, but it still hit. Chris Olave was a need. That hit. Brzee was a need at DT. That hit. So sometimes they do hit, but sometimes they don't. And, I mean, that's probably just indicative of the draft as a whole. But you can see a few where it's like, man, they did this because they had to and it didn't work out. And I just don't like it when you are kind of backed into that corner and then it doesn't necessarily go as hoped. And I guess it makes it easier to open up for this hindsight nitpicking or whatever. But I just would rather that they have these OT things filled to some degree to where it's like, well, damn, what if Malik Nabers does drop? Like, it's not going to happen, but what if it did?
This is the year, though, I would say, I think, since the draft is in an exact science anyway, I don't care if you draft a left tackle that you have graded 2 spots below a receiver this year. That's not reaching to me. Like, I wouldn't take, you know, Jordan Morgan over Malik Nabers, who, like, you know. But this Saints team, I've said this before, more than probably any year since 2006, maybe that 2015 range when they were doing the mini rebuild, they should just take the best player available, because we have, like, 4 guys that we just did the thing the other day. Who's going to be on this team in 2 years? And we came up with, like, 8 names. Like, this team is almost a blank slate in 2026. So just get good players. Again, I'm not going to knock them for taking an offensive tackle.
Here's a realistic one that I think, if Brock Bowers, I don't think you can look at Brock Bowers.
You got to throw him aside.
I don't think he's
a luxury.
I don't think you can even consider him.
Yeah.
Given the circumstances.
No, I agree with that.
So that's kind of, I think that's one where it kind of hits, where it's like, if they had done it, like, maybe you still don't. Maybe the tackle is a higher priority. It's a higher value position. Maybe you should take the tackle anyhow, but I don't think you can even really have the conversation. And I would like to be able to have the conversation. So, but, like, tackle probably is the right answer there.
No, I definitely agree with both of you. They don't have the luxury to look anywhere else. You know, it's like going to a car dealership looking at a Mustang with 2 bent quarters in your pocket. You shouldn't be doing it. You shouldn't be doing it. But what you should do is subscribe to NOF. We have the latest analysis on whichever tackle they pick in the draft. Keep it locked here for more information.
And we don't mind bent quarters.
Nah, we don't.